Welcome back to the Basketball Coaches Roundtable Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Newman. Today, we welcome Tyler Sims as the guest of the roundtable. Coach Sims is the head coach at Clark University in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Appreciate Mark dropping the line.
I think I met Tyler, in early fall of 19. And right away struck me as this is his first year coaching, but he has loads of experience on the Division I level and Division III. And so I was like, oh, this guy, you can pick his mind, but you talk the game with him. And right away, Tyler, I enjoy talking with you. So then Ben invited me on this podcast, but I think it's better to have somebody who knows basketball on this podcast than me.
I definitely won a lot more games than I have, so I can't compare there, but I try to listen a lot and I appreciate it. And I always enjoy talking with you and obviously recruiting your players. Hopefully one day I get to coach one of them, but we'll leave that for another discussion.
Let me just introduce to you and the listeners, everybody that's sitting at the round table with you. So we have L. Green, who's the head coach of Brooklyn Community Arts and Media High School in Brooklyn, New York. And we have Mark Skelton, the head coach at Fannie Lou Hamer Freedom High School in the Bronx. Also author of the book, Pounding the Rock, Basketball Dreams and Real Life in a Bronx High School. Coach Sims, thanks so much for being here again. I really appreciate your time. Mark has told me about you and how much admiration he has for you from your conversations, and then just doing some digging and talking to others, they've spoke really highly of you. So I'm really excited to have you on, and thanks for being here.
Yeah, no, thank you, Ben and Coach Green and Coach Skelton. I appreciate having me and love talking the game and hopefully Coach Skelton said good things, but been fortunate to be in the coaching side of things. So yeah, love to talk more about it.
Yeah. So let me jump right in, cause I know that you're in your second season at Clark University, which right before we started, you were saying how conference has canceled the season, but you're hopeful to get, when you guys get back onto campus, get some practice, maybe some scrimmages in. Before that, you were at Brown for 4 years and Trinity College for two. I believe you had a stint at Siena. Can you talk a little bit about your journey to Clark and the pieces from your different stops that you picked up from that you brought with you, and how that shaped your approach to coaching?
Yeah, for sure. I'd say I wanted to coach since I don't even know when I kind of decided I wasn't good enough to play beyond college. But also my dad was a college football coach when I was growing up. So I think that was always ingrained in me, and just kind of being in the offices and remember watching him watching film, just kind of being around the coaching side of things. That was always a bug I had in me. So after playing Division III basketball, kind of went on a journey coaching prep school, Division I, II, and III, all levels, mostly here in the Northeast. But kind of just through the journey and through my experience, kind of felt that there was very few schools that matched at least kind of what I thought the student athlete experience was about. And the combination of that and then, my own personal competitiveness that I want to win. That combination of a great academic school, a school that's going to support you and help put you in that position to hopefully be successful, to me is, I think there's just a rare few schools that kind of meet that personal criteria that I was looking for when eventually wanted to take over my own program. So I was at Brown University in the Ivy League last 4 years and previous 4 years to being here at Clark, and learned a ton there. And I think that really helped, personally helped me grow as a coach. Obviously the recruiting at that level and the way the Ivy League, everyone talks about the Ivy League, maybe it was 20, 25 years ago, but the last 5 to 10 years and the number of reasons behind that, but Ivy League's really elevated to a top 15, top 12 league in Division I. So that experience is getting, you know, kind of the competitiveness there, recruiting, and then obviously being able to coach and on the floor and with scouting reports and player development and all that kind of stuff, you know, really, I think, helped me a ton. So I give Mike Martin, TJ Sorrentine, Antone Gray, Dwayne Peen, all those guys that I coached with at Brown, you know, I learned a ton from them. Anyway, so that's what we try to bring to Clark, you know, a high academic Division III school. So the non-scholarship situation, you know, is a normal carryover. But then also just how you run a program. To me, at the end of the day, like all of that, all of what I said and what you mentioned, Ben, is like, you know, at the end of the day, like coaching's coaching, you know, whether you're high school, college, somewhere else overseas, like, yeah, there's slight differences in the rules and there's slight variations of, you know, size, speed, skill, but basketball is basketball, you know, and how you do things to me is equally as important as what you do, if not more important. I should say really is more important than what you do is how you do it. So that's kind of, you know, all those things I've taken, yeah, from each school, but to me, it's like, doesn't matter, Division I, II, and III, you know, basketball is basketball. So I've tried to, you know, carry that with who I am. I, you know, Division III guy at heart, for sure. You know, proudly say that as a former student athlete, you know, at this level. But yeah, it's a great experience. I try to impart that to our guys, you know, to say, hey, listen, you know, at the end of the day, yes, you're going to do more with your degree from Clark, but I want you to have a great experience while you're here. You know, so that's kind of the why I coach and a little bit, I guess, of the background too.
Great. Thank you so much. Mark, you want to hit Coach Sims with a question?
Oh, sure. So Tyler, so I feel like you've been on the periphery of New York City for a while. And so you've been in the New England states. So what's your impression of the New York City basketball scene from, you know, recruiting and playing against Columbia to, you know, starting to recruit in the Catholic and the private and the public school leagues? What's your impression of New York City basketball?
Yeah, it's funny. I feel like I've coached in every like small city in the Northeast, you know, but not Boston and not New York City. So haven't lived there. But I feel like, I've been fortunate to coach a ton of great players from New York City. Whether it was my time at Siena, Odie Anasicki, Brandon Walters, Stephen Cruz, you know, when I was assistant at Trinity, you know, we had Edo Gendeko, was at Jefferson, Shea Ajayi, was at Megar Evers, Hark Lieben was at Lujai. And then we have two, you know, student athletes on our team right now, Mikey O'Brien from Beacon and Chuck Stevens from York. So I say all that, one, to give them a shout out. But two, there's some great players in the city. And I think I was told this by a former boss of mine, Jamie Cosgrove at Trinity, that said, like, you know, there's a lot of players in New York City who get highly recruited, and then there's a lot of players that get under recruited. And I kind of thought about that. And, you know, the more I was around New York City, especially on the road as an assistant at Trinity and then Brown for 6 years and now 2 years at Clark, the more time I spend in the city, I realize that's like, that's the biggest statement. That's the most profound statement I've heard, is there's a ton of kids that get under recruited in the city from programs like yours, you guys here on the call and many others. So whether it's the Catholic League, the public school league, and on top of that, you know, I find that there's a lot of really good students that just don't know necessarily about the academic schools, even within a 2.5 hour, 3 hour drive like Clark, that you can get on the train or the bus and get up here to Worcester, you know, pretty easily. You know, so yeah, I mean, I think there's a ton of kids in the city. You know, finding the right ones obviously is important for, you know, anywhere, you know, so the ones that, you know, don't mind, you know, living in a smaller city like Clark. Obviously the academics is a huge hurdle, you know, to go through to get over that transcript and make sure that they can gain admission here. You know, but that being said, there's a ton of really good players, like I said. So some really good coaches, really good programs. And again, all those guys that have, you know, Davis Franks, I don't want to shout out Davis Franks, that left him off from Brown. But yeah, there's some really good players and I love being in and around the city and hopefully, you know, continue to keep recruiting down there.
Coach Green, BCAM High School.
Hey, Coach Sims. Thanks again for being here tonight. We appreciate you.
Likewise. Great to virtually meet you, Coach.
as well. Look forward to meeting you in real life, right?
Whenever it returns to normal.
Right. So you talked about recruiting. What is your rating system for recruits? Like, what are you looking for?
Great question. The tough, hard-playing guys, the one commonality that I've found over all those different teams that I'm fortunate to be a part of, the really good teams have that in common, tough, hard-playing guys. So from the basketball's perspective, like, there's a lot of ways you can play. Ideally, we love to play fast. You know, we had about 78 possessions per game last year, which is a really high number. We shot a ton of threes. 52% of our three shots came from three. Probably a little high on our metrics, but yeah, we like to play fast. We love to play, have pressure defense and get in you. And there's a lot of things you can do, but at the end of the day, I think if you have five guards that are the toughest dudes that are the most competitive, you know, you're going to come out on top more often than not. So that's kind of the biggest thing to me in recruiting is finding that. You know, it's easier said than done. You know, it's, you got to see it and see it a lot. You know, they can kind of trick you once, but you see them multiple times. It's you know, that it, toughness is a skill. So I think that's the biggest thing to me. You know, I always say that high school coaches have it the hardest. Like, you guys got to adapt every year based upon your personnel. You know, you can't recruit it. So yeah, ideally, I think, you know, I would like to recruit to our system. However, last year, taking over as first year head coach and didn't get recruit anybody on the roster, and we had no seniors on the team, kind of had to adapt my preferred style of play and make sure that we're doing the things that culture-wise and the basis of our system, implement those, but not put our guys in a position where they shouldn't be doing things that we wanted them, that we're asking them to do, you know? So I think it's that as a coach. And again, go back to what I said previously, like, regardless of the level, you know, I think coaches' jobs are to put your players in the best position to be successful. So, you know, ideally recruiting, you know, we love the length, athleticism, you know, skill set. We love versatility, you know, to be able to play five guys on the perimeter and have interchangeable parts, to be able to switch stuff and pressure and really affect offensive execution and make them uncomfortable, take them out of what they want to do. But again, I think we have to adjust. So, you know, that's why smart high school coaches like you all, you know, when you guys win games with various rosters every single year, like those are the, everyone says it. And I feel like hopefully you guys get more and more recognition as, you know, some high school coaches are, Danny Hurley and others are making their way up the, Nate Oates are making their way up the coaching ladders. But yeah, it's, hopefully that gives you the answer. I know I went off a separate tangent there from the recruiting standpoint, but that's kind of what we look for, I guess, you know, ability and basketball-wise.
Thanks. That sounds like a B-cam athlete, shooting threes and pressuring the ball.
I love it. I love it, Coach. We got to make this happen.
It does. It does feel like a B-cam and a Fannie Lou.
Definitely there. A Fannie.
And I love what you said about how you played, because that kind of brings me to my question, because I feel like for many years I did a little bit of a disservice to my players, because I don't think I was asking them to do the same thing defensively as I was asking them to do offensively. And Mark and Elle can tell you, you know, for example, my team's press, we did, you know, full court man press, we had a diamond press, we had a 1-3-1, you know, three-quarter court press, and they had one trapping areas, and it was one trap, and we were looking for deflections, for live ball turnovers. But then offensively, on the other side of it, you know, we had this continuity offense where we're trying to get to the third side, right? And we're trying to get to bad closeouts, you know, bad rotations. And so I don't think, so the disservice I think I was doing is I don't think I was marrying my defense with my offense. You know, where I'm asking them to be this aggressive defense, and then I'm asking them to slow it down. So, you know, how do you stand on that? Like, does your defense, is it married to your offense, or, you know, how do you feel about that?
It's a great question. I think if you can have them coincide with each other, I think that is an ideal way to play. But that's not to say that, you know, you can't, there's different ways to skin a cat is the old saying that I was, I don't know when I was told that, probably a long time ago from an older coach, but, you know, there's different ways to do it to be successful. So again, I kind of go back to just what do your players do the best and put them in the position to do that more often than not. I was fortunate. I have one of my best friends is Amanda Belichick, who was the head coach at Holy Cross for women's lacrosse right down the street here. And obviously her dad's a pretty good coach of the Patriots. But I talked to Ernie Adams one time, and Ernie Adams is Coach Belichick's like personal assistant, the coach's coach kind of guy. And he said that to me. I said, it was right when I got the job at Clark. I said, what advice would you give me for year one? And he said, find out what your guys do best and have them do that as many times as possible. And I was like, I kind of thought about it. I was like, yeah, that's really simple. But then the more I thought about it, I was like, yeah, we had a couple really good players last year who could really create their own shot. So I put them in two-man game as much as possible because that's what they did really well. You know, now we played really fast offensively and our defense wasn't as good. So you know, maybe to your point, if we did something different defensively to match our offense, we would have won a few more games. But I mean, again, I kind of go back to just whatever your personnel fits is to me. And that's, you know, as we all steal from guys smarter than us, and Ernie Adams is definitely smarter than I am, you know, so I just stole from him is it's like, hey, whatever your players do best, how you adapt your system to fit them, I think that's most important than what we're doing.
Thank you. Thank you. Mark.
Tyler, you mentioned Nate Oates and Hurley. So I have to ask, are you watching a lot of basketball? Like what are you doing these days?
Yeah, a lot of recruiting. A lot of recruiting. No, we're I watch a ton of basketball. You know, everything from highlight videos, high school game films that are being played in different parts of the country. We're starting to play a little bit here in the Northeast now in late January. So, you know, getting a few more game films. So watching a ton of that. But then, yeah, trying to do a deep dive into some college programs and try to watch, you know, and pick up maybe some things from like almost doing like scouting report based, video breakdown. So instead of, yes, I'll watch a ton of games on TV and you know, my friends that are at the Division I level still, and, you know, I'll watch their games as much as possible. So so definitely doing it that way, but also just trying to do film studies. You know, we did a great breakdown in the off season for our own guys. So watching ourselves, you know, we basically broke down all of our players off season. In the off season, we broke down all of their individual games and basically said, look, okay, here's what you did really well, and here's clips that tied to it, plus, you know, stats, data to back it up. And then here's some things that you didn't do so well that we want you to work on with clips and then data to back it up. So, you know, self-scouting, opponent scouting, different than obviously a normal year when we have two games a week and where I'm in the office more than the one day a week like I am right now. But, yeah, it's definitely trying to just watch as much film as possible and try to stay around the game because, yeah, it's such an odd year and there's limited stuff. I was in your shoes. We talked about this a little bit a few weeks back where I was like, oh, maybe I can treat this as a sabbatical and try to go shadow a program and try to take advantage of this time, you know, with not having a season. And obviously there's a reason we're not having a season is no one's allowed in any gyms and right. Can't have visitors. So unfortunately that got squashed quickly, but yeah, just trying to do that virtually through Synergy and other platforms for sure.
So I get the second part of that question, I guess, is so, you know, you played more than 10 years ago, right? And so how has the game evolved? I mean, I feel like every 2 or 3 years, there's an adjustment, clearly at the higher level, and then it trickles down. So what did, you know, I guess last, you know, especially last year and this year, what are you seeing new? And what are you seeing? Maybe even I've seen a few. I feel like motion offense is actually making a comeback. And you know, and if that's Texas Tech or if that's Yeshiva or who is ever doing it, you know, there are people, teams that are doing it very well. But, you know, that's your question. Sorry.
No, it's great. I mean, I'm going to ask it back to you afterwards.
Yeah,
so
sure.
I'm curious what you're watching this year, but yeah, it's funny. So we did one of the things that we've done a ton of stuff as a team, Zoom wise, you know, virtually, because we can't meet when the guys are on campus or now over winter break. But one of the things we did, and I stole it from Amanda Belichick, my friend, was did a team film study. So we actually brought a game when I was an assistant at Trinity College. So so we watched a game from that season, and that was only I've definitely played more than 10 years ago, by the way. It was but that game was, you know, only 8 years ago. And the number of changes in the game from then to now were really apparent with our guys, whether it was something just as simple as, you know, shot clock was 35, or it didn't reset, you know, touching the rim or on a foul, or excuse me, reset full on those situations. To also just stylistically, you know, like one team shot like 8 threes in that game. The other team shot a ton of long twos. And that was one of the first things our guys pointed out to me, because we don't shoot long twos at Clark. And they were like, Coach, how'd you let him get away with that? And I was like, it was just a little bit different. Like, things have changed. So anyways, yeah, there's definitely a lot of changes in the game. One of the things I think that picked up on, maybe defensively, and I'll let you talk about the offense, is defensively, a lot of teams are doing this no middle concept defensively. So Texas Tech started with it a couple of years ago with one of their assistant coaches. And Baylor's picked up on it, and I think a few other schools as well. So that is something that's really intriguing to me. Just kind of what I talked about before about having taken the offense out of what they want to do, you know. So it's just it's a real continuation on icing ball screens, downing ball screens on the side. So not allowing that ball screen to get middle. Now it's even more so. It's basically just taking that ball screen concept, defensive coverage, to your entire defense and really loading up on the help side. Now it helps when you have elite shot blockers at the rim, like those schools have, where you can have that backline defense. So that's something to me that, you know, has stuck out. I think it's, as we all steal, I think that's going through the college ranks. And, you know, a few years ago, not a lot of people ice ball screens, you know, and now a lot of schools at all levels are doing that. A lot of teams at all levels are doing that. So I could see that kind of coming over to the defensive side in particular. But I want to throw it back to you, though. What are you watching offensively that I need to watch?
No, I think this week was the Virginia-Syracuse game, and such contrast in styles, you know, pack versus 2-3 zone. And, you know, Virginia just, you know, shot the ball very well. And I thought that was just a great game. And talk about having like a team breakdown, you know, because the kids, you know, haven't heard us or heard our voice, or, you know, actually they're watching. I know my team's watching, but I don't know what they're watching. And I'd like to point out some highlights of, you know, especially, you know, you talk about no middle. That's all Virginia did against the zone, as they got middle and they were able to, you know, kick it opposite. And they did it very well. So, you know,
put Kia Clark, their point guard's unbelievable passing vision in the middle of the zone. I remember I saw something, one of the Twitter threads put it out there. You know, they put him in the middle of the zone and then allowed him to come up to the high post, dribbled him out to the high post, brought the five man and just let him play off that and picked him apart. They didn't do that so much the other night. I watched that game as well. But, you're right. I mean, just, you know, they got a middle and then it was kick out, lob. And it went from, you know, one possession game to double digits like that. Sorry, yeah. I didn't mean to cut you off, but
no, I mean, you never get to see Huff dunk the ball, and I think he had like two or three dunks that game. So, no, and I think also, you know, it's interesting you say this is why I think the game is not the game is clearly evolved, but talk about long twos. But I also think, you know, maybe 10 years ago, there were very few teams, you know, shooting the most inefficient shot, and that's still a New York thing. It's, you know, you clearly see it all the time. Kids love the pull up. But I'm just thinking like soon, like everybody's going to be doing the same thing. And so we're like, and so now what I'm trying to look for is what is the latest cutting edge. And it can be, It can be analytical, but it all can be, you know, because now a guy falls down, whole team rushes to pick him up. You know, 15 years ago, you know, only the Celtics were doing it. And now I see like everybody's doing it. So now what I'm thinking now is like, as I watch the teams, like, well, because everybody's copying each other, everybody's shooting the three and layups, and somebody has to be doing something different. And I don't know what that is yet. So that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah. Well, so along those lines, something really interesting. If you've heard of the offense that St. Joe's Maine is running with Noah LaRoche. So there was a couple YouTube videos that were out there. So it's not like I'm giving away secrets. Not that anything we do is secretive, but you know, there was a couple videos out there, and it's a really good breakdown of basically it's called like a principal motion offense. You know, Amanda Belichick is my girl. You know, gut in touch with when those Hank Smith and a couple of those guys, they were running at Emerson when Hank was there. Hank's now a scout with the Thunder. You know, it's a really unique way to play offensively. You know, it's if you really want to dive into something, I think that's, you know, they'll say it's the future of basketball and how the game should be played. I think it combines like a lot of just concepts of just read and react and passing and movement. It's a little bit of predicated, you know, depending on where your teammate goes, you go here kind of thing. But, you know, it's a really fascinating, you know, I think study that could be done, you know, depending on what levels, how it could be applied. But that's definitely something where I think it's unique for sure. And I think that's why it's grasped attention. Never mind, you know, St. Joe's is a great program there, and they've, you know, put up a lot of offensive numbers and wins as well with it. So definitely something I think that, you know, could be studied further.
I also think that not having the tournament last year has kind of put a lot of coaches into this what's next. Because I feel like, you know, like the Final Four coaches go and they do their clinics and they get on the circuit, and then, you know, whoever wins the trophy at the end, oh, what did he do? Or what did she do? And now we're going to do that, you know? And not having that tournament, some of these coaches who may not be so forward thinking, I guess, I shouldn't have said that, but, you know, they're like, we don't know, you know, what should we do next? You know, but I wanted to ask you, cause you were saying you look at film, and, you know, I feel like you probably, like Mark and Elle and myself, go down that rabbit hole, you know, in Synergy or YouTube or, you know, Twitter. It's like, who specifically are you studying? And, you know, I'm like, what are you trying to get?
Yeah, that's it's a great point, because, you know, I think you brought up a couple of things there where it's like, you know, we have this time now, or we had it, you know, some for those fortunate that are coaching this winter. You know, we had all this time, and everyone was, you know, watching videos and studying film and going to clinics and that stuff's terrific. And obviously the virtual space, allows it, you know, both during COVID times and non-COVID times to do that. And sometimes I do think that, you know, it's been said a couple of times where it's like, you know, hey, it could be, you know, information overload. You know, you're coming in with all these ideas of all the stuff that you've seen. And, you know, it's just, you can't do it all. You can't do it all. So, I say that because I try to keep myself grounded a little bit to be like, all right, well, this might work for our group or how we play or how we'd like to play. So I'm just going to keep that one thing, but I can't run everything. So I'm almost trying to pick out one or two things, you know, from each, you know, game I watch or, you know, Twitter thread that goes up, Twitter video that goes up, whatever it is. So, yeah, I mean, individually, like Zach Beauvair does a great job with pickandpop.net. He's assistant at Army and you know, does a great job with video breakdown. So I always watch when his stuff comes up. You know, school specifically, you know, UIC, obviously with a new coaching staff there and, you know, what he's done, one, again, being a high school coach and being a really successful high school coach in Illinois. And then, you know, obviously going from Michigan to Texas and now to USC, You know, I think that's one where it's intriguing, I think, from the standpoint of like, you know, he's done it before at a smaller level and also done it at a high major level. So like Coach Jaklic is one guy that personally, you know, I'm intrigued by. Others up here at Merrimack College, they have a great defensive system, great coaches there. And they got some notoriety last year because, and rightfully so, because they won a ton of games a mythical NEC tournament, NEC champion. I don't know if it's regular season, if they can be crowned with the Division I rules, but either way, like he does a great job. So that's kind of a different way to play for a 2-3 zone that's a little bit of amoeba style, whether it's, wings are really high, they get a ton of steals. It's very aggressive and not that passive traditional 2-3 zone. So that's another one that I'm studying, but also kind of trying to adapt and study as we go. Colgate, Coach Langle does a great job at Colgate. So, offensively and defensively, and they've won a ton of games at a school that hadn't won in a while. So I try to pick some of those programs that maybe, either I have, an affiliation or a friendship with, or it's just, stylistically like, hey, listen, let's maybe study these a little bit and see if I can pick one or two things by watching several games and kind of, again, doing that deep dive, deep study into it.
Thanks. Coach Green, you're up again.
Hey, okay, I'm back. With this time, what is your biggest flaw as a coach, and how are you using this COVID time to strengthen that?
Great question. So definitely made a ton of mistakes, year one. From substitution patterns to not reminding guys of road trip protocol, all that kind of stuff that, year one, I was not my head was spinning, but, you just kind of forget about or weren't seasoned on. So I wish I would have season two to improve on those things. So I definitely think that there's a number of things that I could improve on from, my first year to my second year. Team-wise, I try for a lot of reasons. To me, relationships are huge. This actually over my shoulder here, that's kind of, I refer to as like my trophy wall. It's all pictures of former players that I've coached from prep school to Division II, Mercyhurst. Louise Leao is up there to my time at Siena with Rob Poole up on that wall. Hyde Ratner at Mercyhurst as well. Give shout out to Hyden. So point being is like relationships are important to me. So whenever I coach guys as an assistant and then as a head coach, obviously, to carry that over and go from being an assistant coach and having that relationship to being a head coach and still trying to have that relationship that I value and I think is really important because, looking back and aside from my dad, one of the big reasons I coach is because of Coach Leon Modesti, who's a prep school coach of mine, and then Stan Ogrodnik, who was my college coach at Trinity. And those relationships, to me, have carried over from my playing days. And I want our guys, our student athletes, to have that same experience with me as the head coach. So I say that because I think it's a working thing, continue to work on relationships and communicating. We talk about all the time as coaches, and us in particular, Clark, accountability and communication are two pillars of the program. And, especially now with moving so much virtually, I've tried to over-communicate with our guys, more than I ever did last year and just as an improvement, but also just because of the times to try to communicate as much as possible. So, I'm hitting the group chat often, just sending them random clips, funny things like I'm not good with Photoshop, but just sending photos, saying happy birthday, to the guys. We're trying to meet, as I mentioned previously, we're trying to meet, and I just got off a 6 o'clock call. We have a great academic liaison, Dr. Nadia Ward, and talk to our guys kind of like about race relations and the racial injustices going on in the country. So anyways, just all that communication to me is really, really important. And that adjustment from being an assistant coach to a head coach, it's something I definitely could have done better and something again that to me is I want to continue to strive because I want that wall to grow and I want guys to say like, hey, listen, I love Clark, I had great experience, and then you know, if they invite me to their wedding, which my two coaches are coming to my wedding when I get married, if I get married, hopefully, knock on wood, 2021 behaves. But yeah, like that relationships to me is why we do this. And so hopefully that's something I can continue to and always improve on.
Hey, before I hit you with the last question, I want to throw the ball to you. I want to see if you have any questions for us.
So what, I guess from the high school perspective, right? Like what do we need to do more as college coaches to help, you know, recruit your student athletes? Like what's the biggest thing that either is missing in the process? I think there's definitely some things on my side, but it's also like, how can I help fill in holes, or how can college coaches in general fill in holes in the recruiting process to help prepare, you know, your student athletes for the next level?
Well, it's not your fault, Tyler. New York City suffers from this syndrome that everyone who picks up a basketball thinks they're a D1. And unfortunately, you know, there's very few Division I players, but I think the city's full of Division III players. But their, you know, their ego or their ignorance or their coach's ignorance, or, you know, it's a pandemic in its sense that you could have so many good players. But I think, I mean, as you probably know, is as you kind of introduce yourselves, you know, they probably ask you the first thing is like, what division are you? and you know, we all know that most Division I athletes don't graduate from college, and specifically basketball, men's basketball. Whereas Division III men's basketball graduation rates are very, very high. So, you know, I think for us, that's our job. Our job, we need to be selling Division III basketball, because I think that's where, you know, life can actually get started, where so many kids fall through the loophole where they go JUCO or end up somewhere in the Midwest on a team with 9-10 other guys that play the same position. So now we have, you know, and that happens all the time. And you hear about a kid who goes down to Louisiana and things didn't work out, where he could have had a fantastic career at Clark, right, or Middlebury, or, you know, some other place in the Northeast, close to home.
I also think, no, that was great, Mark, and I'll let Elle take it too after me. I also think if me as a high school coach is reaching out to, you know, a university or a basketball program, I'd like something to come back. You know what I mean? I've too many times have I been trying to help my players, and I think, you know, all of us on this call have enough skin in the game where we can, you know, clearly say to one of our players, like, you're not a Division I player. You're not going to the NBA, you know, right out of high school, you know, and Clark University might be a really good fit for you. You know, and there's been many times where I've gone through this process with a player and reached out to a coach and I've gotten nothing back, you know, and I think that's where I'd love to see the bridge, you know, continue and be built and be able, you know, to build that relationship from my end as a high school coach to a college coach. You know, I understand, but I also understand on the flip side, the amount of inquiries you probably get, or the amount of just, you know, those cold calls, those cold emails, you know, and the amount of film and like, check out my highlight reel, coach, you know, that you must get. But I feel like if it's coming from another coach and not necessarily the player, you know, there, you know, I would love to see that, the professional respect almost, you know, and, so I feel like that's a big key for me that I've been trying to break down, you know, especially if I've called and I've emailed like multiple times, like there's a reason, you know, so But again, I know, especially now, you can't really recruit in person, so you are getting probably a ton of film to look at.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I think, unfortunately, that's a good and bad. I think, you know, with the digital age and obviously social media being part of that is, when I first, you know, regular assistant coach, college assistant coach job at Mercyhurst, we were still doing VHS, you know, and that wasn't that long ago. And just that switch to be able to have a link and send it with a click of a button is great for a lot of reasons. You don't have to track FedEx numbers and get yelled at because my head coach is telling me that it should be here and it's not, like that whole thing. But no, so like that's great. But I think to your point, yeah, sometimes it can become a lot, you know. Unfortunately, so even going back, like my Gary Manchel at Mercyhurst, he said, he goes, every single tape they receive, you're going to watch as an assistant coach, because we got an all-conference player from a random film that was sent in the mail at that time, again, VHS. And he's like, so you're going to watch everyone. So anyway, that stuck with me over the years. And I agree, it's changed obviously a little bit now, but, you know, having film on kids is, to me, the most important thing right now for us as college coaches. You know, I talked to Mark about this, and I've talked to many high school coaches and prep school coaches and AAU guys that I've had relationships with. And I say, listen, I'm just not going to get a good sense of a player right now because I can't watch them live. I haven't been in the gym in over 10 months and recruiting. And, you know, just I'm gonna have to see something, but I'm gonna rely on you for the intangible stuff. So like being able to, whether it's someone, you know, a cold email, you know, to me at Clark, if you include, you know, your GPA, your name, your GPA, and a highlight film, I'm gonna watch it, and then if I like you, we'll get back to you, right? Kind of that's, you know, personally, you know, how I believe, just because it's, you know, you can watch highlights to get a sense, okay, like, listen, I think this, you know, this player could play at our level, or like they fit really well. You know, there's some intriguing things. So let me contact the coach, contact the player, then get game film and really dive into the game film. But I think, unfortunately, yeah, I've heard that sentiment too much. And I do think that it's an error on our side as coaches that, you know, too many of those emails don't get opened or don't get watched or don't get replied. So yeah, that's a tough thing. And you know, it does go back to relationships, obviously, when you can lean on someone that you trust and you know, and you know, meeting you guys obviously isn't great. So these are bonuses. But yeah, it's all about, you know, to me right now, it's about film and then including the right information to then be able to follow up with that person.
Yeah. That's great. Because it is about the relationship. Like if I don't, you know, if I didn't know Mark and I'm trying to send him, you know, a kid, you know, nine, you know, for me, the experience that I had, 9 times out of 10, Mark's not responding, you know, and it's unfortunate because it could have been, you know, an all conference player for you. You know, you never know, you know, or it could be, you know, on the flip side, all right, this kid's not that good. I don't need to trust this coach in the future, you know.
But. No, I mean it's a tough thing to navigate. But you're right. I mean, I definitely think on our end as college coaches, we need to do a better job to help bridge those one relationships, because it's like, hey, maybe this not the player this year, but obviously it can help you next year, you know. And that's why it's like relationships. You don't know when, you know, you're going to get the fruits of the labor, but you know, you're going to have guys you trust, and you know, you might be able to coach some of their players, you might not, but you know, you might get something else out of it that you don't know. So I definitely think that's it's a big part of our profession in general, again, at every level, is about relationships for sure.
Yeah, I mean, and we're stealing everything from everybody anyway.
Exactly.
So it almost goes hands in hand. Elle, what do you think about this?
I was sitting back listening to you guys. As a former Division I athlete, I struggle with 1995. You know, I had Nancy Darsh, Coach Gunner, you know, these coaches coming into my home. And it's hard, like Mark said, I think it's our job to build the relationships with the coaches on all levels. My struggle when I am trying to promote my kid is that being playing on all levels, it's hard for me to promote certain kids. So I don't ever want to lie to a coach about what they're getting. And because my program is so challenging with the 6 a.m. workouts, with the mile time before they can touch the floor to play, with the study halls, with the Zooms, I know exactly what they are. Mm-hmm. And some of them are just not, like Mark said, they think they're Division I players. And when you tell them that, I'm like, I played at Ohio State. I played overseas. I played professionally. Like, I'm giving you the tools. And if you can't do this, then I'm uncomfortable sending you somewhere else. Because unlike high school, the person that I'm sending you to, their livelihood depends on this. So that's my struggle with sending kids to schools. And when I'm trying to get them to the twos and the threes, because I know, like, I know this guy from someone else. Like, someone told me, "El, send this your kids here. They're going to get an education." Like Mark said, they're going to graduate. They're going to become men, you know, parts that I can't teach as a female. And they're going to begin their life. They don't want to hear that because they have these, I'm going to say, clowns in their ear telling them, like, you're better than what she said you are. And these clowns are people that have never even played high school basketball, you know? So that's the struggle. But I think that we have to foster better relationships with coaches. I know this is one of my flaws. And as well as I think, like Ben said, like those emails, I've sent out emails to programs that I knew in this area that my kid would benefit from and they would help them. It was a missing piece, but you know, we're a B level, so they're not a double A level, so they don't even want them. But you're not even looking at who the coach comes to a practice, you know? I think that's another thing. Coaches come to a practice and see exactly, you'll know within 5 minutes if the program is good for you. Maybe this year you won't be able to get a kid there, but you'll know, like, okay, this program is a program that I would like to invest in. And I think that's the missing piece. Coaches don't come to practices to see what is out there, because there's a lot of kids that I've seen play. Can't remember this kid's name. He played in Mark. I think you played against him in the championship year, or Gynas or whatever his name is. I think he wound up going to Niagara or something. Kid was so talented. He was a B player, and people were not looking at him. And I think that's the flaw of it. They're looking at the classes. I wish we can go back to that. When I was in high school, it was probably a B, but that was it. And you just played. You got your butt kicked. But you could tell who the players were back then. And it's a struggle right now, because a lot of players, as coaches, we know if you're in a system, you can look really good. But you, because you're in that system, is tailored to you to make you look good, you know? So that's where I sit with that. I hope I wasn't long with
it. No, that's a great point, because, you know, we always say as coaches, you know, like yeah, obviously games matter, right? That's kind of what we get judged on, you know, the results in the games. But like practices is where, you know, that's what you prepare for the games for. And that's what, you know, you're going to have 70 plus practices and 25 games or whatever the numbers, the ratios are. But, you know, you're going to be around, and that's what you value as a coach, or I value person as a coach. That's a great point of going to more practices at high school level. That's a really good point. I like that. And one thing I will say, just to piggyback off that, is like, the 2 years ago, I went to the CHSAA June team camp that they ran. And that was one of the best events that I've been to. I talked to a few of the coaches at that event, high school coach at that event. And that was, to me, was tremendous from a lot of reasons. One, just the organizational standpoint. You know, you get to see kids play. You know, they crossed over some of the classes. You know, and it was just a lot of talent in the building too. You know, we're still recruiting a couple of kids from that event right now in 2021. So yeah, I mean, if there's something, obviously there's so many unknowns, and then there's a lot going on, but if we do return to a normal kind of schedule, and the PSAL could kind of figure out how to join or create something like that. I mean, like, to your point, Coach Green, like that's a great way to see kids and from different classes. And you know, there's good players, as I mentioned to start, like there's a lot of really good players in the city. And, you know, some of them just don't get seen as much as the highest level programs or the ones that are playing on the sneaker circuits or whatever it is. And, you know, they fit a lot of levels. You know, Niagara, great school in the MAC, or small college, Division II, Division III. There's a lot of really good players that are out there that are not at those premier programs.
Absolutely. And the CHSAA, you know, did you guys, you know, great service in running that showcase. And, you know, the public school did not do their kids a, you know, a service in doing something like that. That's unfortunate. So I want to hit you with this last question, because taking over Clark, the New Mac is a tough conference. You know, Babson, I think, won the whole, you know, Division III a couple years ago. You know, Springfield's typically pretty good. You know, so what do you think you need to do at Clark to bring your program up to the upper quarter of the conference?
Yeah, we don't like to talk about all those other schools and what they did, though. I'm sorry. It's a great conference. There's great programs, great coaches at all those schools you mentioned, and the others as well. So, yeah, I proudly say that, you know, there was four teams in the NCAA tournament last year from the New Mac, so half the league, 4 out of 8, and that's the most in Division III. So easily argue the best, if not one of the best, Division III conferences in the country. What I will say on top of that is Clark has predominantly been that number one school. We've been to 16 NCAA tournaments, been to 6 Elite Eights, and we've been to 2 national championship games. There's only 3 teams in the region that have done that, and we're one of those 3. So, you know, it's a high level of success. And that, to me, you know, it's the old saying, it's like, you know, it's history repeats itself, right? It's like, it's easier said than done, but that's what we're aiming to do here at Clark is repeat that history. You know, Wally Hallis, I'm shocked I didn't shout him out yet. Wally Hallis, Westchester now, a former Clark coached at Columbia. One of my best friends is John Hallis, his son, my former college teammate. So he's really the reason I got here to Clark. But Wally set a high bar, you know, with his teams in the late 70s into the 80s, you know, went to 10 straight NCAA tournaments. Like that to me is the exciting part of being here at Clark is, you know, our alumni are terrific. They want us to be successful again. Our administration, is extremely supportive and wants our program to be successful. You know, and then talk to our guys all the time about that. Like we don't hide from those numbers. You know, our first meeting, I put them up on the board. I said 16, 6, and 2, right? Like those are what we're striving to add to each one of those numbers every year we put on a Clark uniform, because that's the bar that's been set here. And, you know, in recruiting, you know, it's one of the first things I mentioned to recruits is like, listen, this is a competitive situation. Like I came here to win a national championship. That's the only thing that hasn't been done at Clark. You know, again, now it's easier said than done, you know, but that's, to me, the really exciting part is that things are in place here for us to get back to that level. You know, now we need, because of what you mentioned and some of those other schools, you know, have done some great things, and it's really hard. You know, I mean, there's great programs and great coaches in this conference. And to me, you know, it's that's what makes it fun. You know, that's why I left a great situation at Brown to come to Clark is, you know, again, it's kind of that great mix of high level academics. The other thing I didn't throw in there, but I definitely got to throw in, is we have a fifth-year free master's program. So you come to Clark, you get an undergraduate degree and a master's in 5 years, tuition-free master's. So you come here, you get 2 degrees in 5 years. You have a chance to play in one of the best Division III conferences in the country, and compete nationally. You know, like that's the sell to me of why, of how we're going to do it. But it always comes back to Jimmy's and Joe's. You know, it's not the scheme stuff. It's not the stuff that I'm going to draw up on that whiteboard behind me. It's players, you know, and we need the players that buy in that love this university and that want to compete at that level. And I'm excited to, you know, again, Wally Howe set the bar really high, but I'm excited to try to reach it.
Yeah, that's great. Tuition free masters. Sign me up. We're
it's a great draw. It's a great draw. We have 3 seniors coming back next year that have their extra year of eligibility and are getting a master's paid for and playing 4 years at Clark. Just thought I'll be at a different timeline. So I would say, like, hey, it's a worst case scenario. It's not a bad worst case that you stay on for next year, get a free master's and still get to wear the Clark jersey.
Yeah, that is really awesome. Coach Tyler Sims, thank you so much for your time. This was an amazing conversation. Great talk. I'm really looking forward to seeing your teams when they get back out there. Thank you. Thank you. Really appreciate it.
That was the best one yet, for sure.
I don't know about all that, but I appreciate you guys having me. And likewise, you know, like hopefully you can get down to watch your teams play. If not, you know, send some video. I'd love to watch you guys and try to steal from some of the stuff you guys are doing.
And get to one of Elle's practices.
You're right. Great point.
At 6 a.m.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Basketball Coaches Roundtable podcast. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at BCRPodcast11.